brutal Israeli aggression on Gaza and lifting the siege imposed on its people.
Syrians and Palestinians gathered today to tell the world that Palestine is a beacon that will never fade, and the people of Gaza will never capitulate despite the tremendous Western support for the Israeli atrocities committed against them. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Crowds of Yemenis took to the streets of the capital Sana'a after Friday prayers to reaffirm their solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn the brutal Israeli aggression on besieged Gaza Strip. Israel's bombardment of Gaza, which started over a month ago, has claimed the lives of more than 11,000 Palestinians, most of whom women and children.
We came out today to express our support for the Palestinian resistance fighters and to show our solidarity with Palestinian civilians who are being killed by all types of Israeli weapons.
My message to the Arab leaders who have normalized ties with Israel: you will suffer great consequences from your people and from the entire Muslim world.
The participants in the Friday demonstration also expressed their support for the Yemeni army's latest missile and drone attacks, which targeted the city of Eilat in the south of occupied Palestine and forced Israeli schools to close temporarily.
We indeed fired our cruise and ballistic missiles at Tel Aviv and Eilat, and they reached their targets. We also shot down a U.S. spy drone over Yemen's territorial waters. The Americans initially denied this, but we proved that to the world and released that video, which forced them to later admit the truth.
The speeches delivered at the rally stressed that it is a religious duty for Yemen's armed forces to continue targeting the Israeli entity despite any consequences Yemen may face. As long as Yemen defies U.S. and continues to launch attacks against Israel, there is a high possibility that Yemen could soon be targeted by Israeli and American fighter jets. But according to Abdelmalek al-Houthi, the leader of Yemen's revolution movement, Yemen will be ready at the time. As the Yemeni military spokesperson has confirmed, Yemen will continue to launch drone and ballistic missiles towards Israel until a ceasefire is reached. The Yemeni army is also considering targeting Western military warships that are currently patrolling in the Red Sea. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
In South Korea, rallies and marches in support of Palestine have added pressure to the U.S. to get Israel to end its military campaign in Gaza. But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Japan and South Korea this week repeated remarks that contradict the realities of Israel's military bombardment and invasion of Gaza.
It is imperative that the Palestinian people be central to governance in Gaza and in the West Bank as well, and that, again, we don't see a reoccupation. And what I've heard from Israeli leaders is that they have no intent to reoccupy Gaza and retake control of Gaza.
Unlike the U.S., South Korea has not offered unconditional support for Israel as it seeks to maintain good relations and trade with its many Middle Eastern partners. Activists argue leaders must do more to rein in Israel's attack on Gaza.
How you can let this happen? Where is your dignity? Where is your honor? Where is you stand for the rights? I'm not standing for the religion. What's happening in Palestine is not about religion. It's not about Islam. They bomb churches. They bomb mosques. They kill babies, Muslims, Christians. No matter what religion, they just kill. And this is exactly what is the definition of terrorism.
Social media has been instrumental in spreading awareness of the disproportionate Israeli attacks. At each demonstration in Seoul, local Korean activists and supporters of Palestine join residents from all over the world, the U.S., the Middle East, and elsewhere, as the voices demanding a ceasefire grow.
As criticism is heaped on the U.S. over its blanket support of Israel, American officials say they're trying to encourage Tel Aviv to limit civilian casualties. Meanwhile, the Biden administration seeks a further $14 billion in military aid for Tel Aviv that many suggest might be used for more Israeli war crimes. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The Iranian embassy in Damascus organized a consultative meeting entitled Israel on the Slope of Fall to discuss the most important repercussions of the Hamas-led Al-Aqsa Float operation against Israel. The Iranian ambassador has expressed his absolute confidence in the victory of the resistance.
The Zionist entity in America were defeated by the resistance in Syria, especially that more than 80 countries got involved and failed. Likewise, the entire Western world waged a battle against Yemen and failed. Victory today is in the hands of the resistance axis.
The Palestinian resistance has proven that it is capable of facing challenges. The Al-Aqsa flood operation is considered a tsunami in military thinking, a marvel in field performance, and a fundamental foundation upon which much can be built in a scientific, objective, and logical manner.
Analysts and experts confirm that the Al-Aqsa flood operation is a historic military epic that imposed a new reality on the Israeli entity and will lead to its demise and the expulsion of the American forces from the region.
As leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, the pure blood of martyr Qasem Soleimani demands the complete expulsion of the Americans from the region.
No regional and Arab country will be able to pressure the resistance to release the prisoners without paying the price.
Participants emphasized the importance of preserving the outcomes of this achievement and consecrating it as a significant victory that signifies a new milestone in the course of the conflict.
Despite any debates over what happened on October the 7th, everyone agrees that Palestinian resistance has destroyed the myth of the invincible Israeli army and that Al-Aqsa Flood operation has initiated the countdown to the end of Israel. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The Israeli onslaught in Gaza has ignited a wave of protests across Pakistan as people express their anger over the regime's back-to-back attacks on the besieged territory.
Israel would never be able to carry out its inhumanity and its barbarity and its atrocities unless it was helped and funded and supported and weaponized by America, UK, European Union, and I want to condemn the Organization of Islamic Conference for being complicit and silent and inactive.
In response to the ongoing crisis in Gaza, Pakistani citizens are raising their voices to demand an end to the war crimes being committed in the region.
So far, no financial support, no medical support, and no practical food and other necessities have been delivered to the people of Gaza. So there is a catastrophe, there is a humanitarian crisis, war crimes are being committed by Israel.
The Gaza is bleeding and Gaza is being massacred in huge numbers, and we are unable to do anything. We are not even able to give the aid to them, to provide medicine, to provide food, commodities. How they are living in the open sky, and the children are bleeding, children are dying every day.
Meanwhile, the government of Pakistan is responding to the ongoing Israeli aggression by sending its second consignment of relief goods that consisted of hygiene kits, medicines, and food packages.
Like people in many parts of the world, Pakistanis are worried about Israel's constant air attacks on civilians in Gaza. They demand an immediate end to the regime's onslaught. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
As part of a diplomatic dash across West Asia, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Ankara and met with his Turkish counterpart Hakan Fidan. The visit comes one day ahead of the Turkish police raiding pro-Palestinian protesters who tried entering the Incirlik airbase, which hosts U.S. troops with tear gas and water cannons. Demonstrators condemned the U.S. unconditional support for Israel in its aggression against Palestinians, stressing the U.S. is Israel's partner in the genocide taking place in Gaza.
The fierce Israeli attacks against Palestinians are due to the United States' unlimited support to Netanyahu's cabinet. If the U.S. did not support Israel from the first place, we wouldn't see them committing such massacres openly and not even thinking of the consequences. I think the only way a ceasefire or pause can be achieved if the U.S. stops its blind support to the Israeli government in its aggression on Gaza. The United States must use its influence to push for peace, not war. And the huge rallies we've seen in the U.S. and the American public refusing to fund massacres and genocides will push the Biden administration to stop its support to Israel.
In a speech made during his visit to his hometown, Rize, the Turkish president said his country has never left the brothers in Gaza unprotected, helpless and alone, and will never do so. Erdogan said that it is Turkey's duty to protect the holy sites in Jerusalem al-Quds. He added that Israel has taken a very wrongful step by which it has darkened its future.
It is our duty to save our Palestinian brothers from Israeli oppression and to stop the massacres committed in Gaza before the eyes of the world.
Turkey has been strongly condemning Israeli aggression on Gaza, which has killed more than 10,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Ankara has withdrawn its ambassador in Israel and strongly condemned the Israeli aggression on Gaza. The country's President Erdogan has also threatened to call Israel a war criminal. But there has still been no clear and official statement on cutting ties with the occupying regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
On Monday, a conference called Religions on Peace and War was held at Rome's Luis Guido Carli University, considered one of the most distinguished private research institutes in Italy. The conference, attended by academics and representatives of religious groups, had been presented as an initiative on the positive role religions can play in peacemaking or de-escalating violent conflicts. It turned out to be a meeting absurdly victimizing Israel in the ongoing siege launched on the Gaza Strip, without any regard for the massacre of innocent people who have been under oppression and occupation for decades in Palestine. In addition to that, a number of deceitful statements were presented by some of the conference speakers to the audience.
What I'm saying here is that terrorists used violence on Israeli people on October 7, going to their homes and chopping the heads off kids and killing women after abusing them. Saying that Israel upholds the Palestinians in a state of apartheid is out of context. What's happening in former Palestine is Palestinians' responsibility.
UN experts and a number of human rights organizations, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have argued for years that apartheid is being practiced by Israel in the occupied Palestinian territories. One of the speakers and some students from the audience pointed out that the reconstruction of the events occurred in Palestine made by the president of the Jewish community was totally biased.
The role of religions is also to promote dialogue in order to find solutions. The issue here is that mutual recognition must be the starting point. The previous speaker called the disputed territories former Palestine. How can you call them that way? There is no former Palestine. There is Palestine and there are Palestinians. We won't go anywhere if we continue this way.
At no time during the conference it was mentioned that over 10,000 Palestinian civilians and more than 4,000 children have been slaughtered so far after 4 weeks of Israeli bombardment on the besieged Gaza Strip. One of the issues that have been raised during the conference is how Western countries are showcasing a very selective morality in choosing the conflicts where they express outrage and claiming their universal values. In the same way, for decades, the West has had a selective and biased approach to the implementation of international law. Max Civili, Rome.
As Israel intensifies its military operation in Gaza, public sentiment in Pakistan has shifted sharply against companies and brands that are perceived to be pro-Israel or pro-America. Social media campaigns have been launched calling for a boycott of popular international brands like McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut, Coke, Pepsi, and many others. Influencers and public figures are using their platforms to urge people to refrain from purchasing from these companies, which are seen as supportive of Israel and the United States.
To demonstrate our support for Palestinians, we can impose bans on products from companies that are directly or indirectly backing Israel. I urge people worldwide to rise beyond religious or national differences and stand together in the name of humanity by boycotting pro-Israeli and pro-American companies.
The ongoing war on Gaza has fueled a wave of anger and frustration among Pakistanis who view these companies as complicit in the violence and suffering of Palestinians.
By refusing to purchase products from companies that support Israel, we can show our solidarity with Palestinians and contribute to their cause. Let's unite in the face of this humanitarian crisis and send a powerful message by boycotting companies that contribute to the suffering of the Palestinians.
As a result of this boycott, the sales of pro-Israeli companies in Pakistan have witnessed a record decline in recent weeks.
Ever since the boycott campaign started, we have noticed a significant drop in sales of the US and Israeli-made products. Customers are increasingly avoiding products that are associated with the United States or Israel, and it's impacting our business. The boycott has really hit us hard. People are not buying these products anymore. They prefer local products.
In response, these businesses are actively leveraging social media to try to recover their market share and restore their public image.
The call for a boycott of pro-Israeli companies is a testament to the deep empathy and concern of Pakistanis for the plight of Palestinian people and their desire to contribute to a resolution of the conflict. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
In the limelight.
The British government's anti-BDS bill that intends to ban local public bodies from joining the popular boycott campaign against the Israeli regime threatens to erode democratic values, restrict freedom of expression, and undermine campaigns for social justice. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Monitor has covered this story and tells us more. A large number of students in a show of solidarity with Palestine at over 20 universities across the United Kingdom have called for divestment from Israeli apartheid regime and urged their vice-chancellors to oppose the oppressive anti-BDS bill. In a statement released on Wednesday, 4th of October, Friends of Al-Aqsa said a Palestine Day of Action had been coordinated to denounce a parliamentary bill that seeks to ban public bodies from boycotting Israeli goods. The Friends of Al-Aqsa said in a statement, the anti-BDS bill threatens the rights of public bodies, including universities, to divest from Israeli companies involved in inflicting apartheid on Palestinian men, women and children. In June, the British government introduced a parliamentary bill that seeks to ban public bodies from boycotting Israeli goods, sparking outcry from Palestinian advocacy groups and human rights activists. Under the guise of anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse, the legislation will prevent public organizations in the United Kingdom from boycotting the apartheid Israeli regime through sanctions and divestment campaigns. The statement noted students from Kent to Newcastle will urge their vice-chancellors to oppose this dangerous legislation, and students across the country will call for their institutions to divest from companies complicit in Israeli human rights abuses in Palestine, including companies like Rolls-Royce PLC, Hewlett-Packard, British Aerospace Systems and Booking.com. Friends of Al-Aqsa added, Rolls-Royce manufactures crucial components of the F-35 joint strike fighters used by Israel to attack the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Hewlett-Packard maintains hardware for the Israeli police, who enforce apartheid on Palestinians within the occupied territories. Pro-Palestinian activists say Britain's anti-BDS bill gives Israel protective shield over crimes. Aisha, an undergraduate student at Salford University in Manchester, said, "As students at Salford, we are here today to make it clear that it's unacceptable for our university to fund human rights abuses. We came here to learn, not to fund apartheid. Our vice-chancellor must act now. He must divest from unethical investments and stand up for the right to boycott the apartheid regime of Israel." The Palestinian Authority's foreign ministry has called on all countries to put individuals tied to secular terrorist organizations or companies investing in illegal Israeli settlements across the occupied Palestinian territories on their terror lists. This comes as the Israeli regime has been pressing ahead with its illegal settlement expansion in the Palestinian territories despite international outcry. The policy has seen the support of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist cabinet. The United Nations has already published a list of companies with business ties to Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. The International Pro-Palestinian Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, the BDS movement, has said the database was a very significant first concrete step by any United Nations entity towards holding to account Israel and its international corporations. The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The British government's move to table a bill in the Parliament that intends to ban local public bodies from joining the popular boycott campaign against the Israeli regime threatens to erode democratic values, restrict freedom of expression, and undermine campaigns for social justice. Rani Ahmadi, a legal advisor to the United Nations and the European Union, who previously served as the United Nations legal advocacy representative of BADIL, the Resource Centre for Palestinian Residency and Refugee Rights, made these remarks in an interview with Iran's English-language television Press TV. The Ramallah-born activist and attorney remarked, "We Palestinians, lawyers, activists from all over the world and civil societies are deeply concerned by the government's anti-boycott bill, which threatens to erode local democracy, restrict freedom of expression under Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and undermine campaigns for social and climate justice. The Economic Activity of Public Bodies Bill, which opposes boycotts of the Israeli regime, was introduced in the British Parliament, the House of Commons, recently, sparking a massive outcry. Justifying the move, UK Community Secretary Michael Gove claimed in a statement recently, "These campaigns not only undermine Britain's foreign policy, but lead to appalling anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse. That is why we have taken this decisive action to stop these disruptive policies once and for all." Rani Ahmadi, a legal advisor to the United Nations and the European Union, told Press TV's website that from the Balfour Declaration to the British Mandate of Palestine, Britain has played an irrefutable role in dispossessing Palestinians from their homeland, in Palestine's colonization and ethnic cleansing, and aiding the world's longest military occupation in history. She added, "We have to go to the root cause of the colonization, which goes back 106 years. She added, "Don't forget the Balfour Declaration, which called for the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. The British had no right, no authority or consent over to determine their destiny." The growing popularity of the movement has prompted governments in the West to curb its activities under the pressure of pro-Israel lobbies, with Britain's efforts spearheaded by Michael Gove and various other politicians. Rani Ahmadi said, The boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, the BDS movement and other such campaigns have long been used to campaign peacefully for progressive change around the world. The new Arab website has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a legal opinion provided to the opposition Labour Party, free speech could be under threat if the British government's controversial anti-boycott bill becomes law. The advice from Matrix Chambers lawyer Richard Hermer KC was published recently ahead of the bill's second reading in the House of Commons. Like legal advice provided by another lawyer to Amnesty International, obtained by the New Arab recently, Richard Hermer, KC, raised the issue of freedom of expression under Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Richard Hermer, KC, said, "This very poorly drafted bill is likely to have a detrimental impact on the United Kingdom's ability to protect and promote human rights overseas. It is in certain respects inconsistent with our obligations under international law and will stifle free speech at home in a manner incompatible with Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights. It will take powers long exercised by local authorities into the hands of the Secretary of State and will likely lead to an array of illogical outcomes." Rivka Barnard, Deputy Director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, called the proposed legislation repressive. She told the New Arab, "It is no surprise that legal experts have confirmed our position that the government's anti-boycott bill is incompatible with international laws and conventions on human rights, including, but not limited to, issues around freedom of expression."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Israeli war in Gaza is in its 36th day. The Gaza Strip is still experiencing Israeli aerial bombardments, with the death toll climbing higher. This is why the U.S. and Israel have implemented a four-hour military pause, which by many standards is not nearly enough for Palestinians to move from one place to another or have their injuries be tended to. Also on this day, a joint OIC and Arab League emergency meeting has taken place, which the Iranian president also attended. All agreed on the genocide committed by the barbaric regime, but the question remains, will words turn into action when it comes to stopping this war and to prevent Israel from committing more war crimes? First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Sakina Datu is a journalist, author, and producer who joins us from London. Also joining us is Saeb Shah. He's an author and West Asia expert who joins us from Belfast. All right, let me first start with you, Sakina Datu, if I may, and can't really not mention this, and that is the fact that we're looking at the death toll that at this point has surpassed 11,000. You have 4,506 children and 3,027 women. Every hour, 42 bombs are dropped. 12 buildings are destroyed. 15 people are killed. Every hour, six of them are children, and one child dying every 10 minutes. There are mechanisms that were supposed to be in place on the world stage in one form or another to prevent this type of massacre from happening, but they haven't worked. Why do you think that is?
I think, first of all, just to mention the number of deaths that you have mentioned, honestly, it is just unprecedented. I think it has now become something that most people have even starting to become insensitive to. It sounds like it's just numbers now. Everyday numbers are increasing. But these are real people. These are real lives and families who are, you know, completely torn apart. Why it is not happening? I think it is because the U.S., obviously, the Western countries, their strategy has not yet come to fruition. So they have a plan for what they want to achieve in Gaza. And until, you know, they achieve that, they're not going to stop or bring a ceasefire. So much as the world has been screaming and shouting, we now see after so many days that there are now discussions about halting a temporary ceasefire. This is because to a large extent, they were waiting for them to be able to achieve certain military and political goals, which I think to some extent they have achieved. And so now we are starting to see talks, but I don't even think that it's going to stop anytime soon. And God knows how many more lives are going to be lost before there is a genuine worldwide effort to bring a ceasefire.
All right. When it comes to talks, Sabshath, so we've had this joint OIC Arab League summit, and you have 57 Arab and Islamic nations in attendance. We've looked at their final communique, and they said that there needs to be a statement that is binding from the UN in order to stop this war from continuing. The question is there going to be anything that can translate into action on the ground? Or are we just looking at words again? I mean, you know, and some are criticizing the fact that this was held after all this time, 34 days.
Yeah, after 36 days.
36 days, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. They come and hold this meeting. We are talking about 2 billion Arabs and Muslims. They have more than 55 armies altogether. Some of them, like Turkey, Egypt, and others, many others, and Saudis, and they have huge, large, well-equipped armed forces. And the only thing they met and they just communiques and words after 36 days of genocide launched by the Zionist entity and the U.S. and NATO in support of that. They did not even manage to collectively action to back up a country like Egypt, all of the 55 countries, to open the corridor, a humanitarian corridor from Rafah to Gaza, from the Egyptian border to Gaza. 55 Arabic and Muslim countries, from Malaysia to Lebanon, they couldn't manage to put their weight behind and to pressurize Egypt as well, and to tell them that we are behind you, just open a humanitarian corridor to at least save the people of Gaza, because Gaza is now at the verge of famine, massive hunger, and a pandemic, because there is no no clean waters, there is no hygiene facilities left. You know, the sewage is not working. There is because there is no energy. The Zionist entity targeting even the solar system panels. They targeting the water storage and areas. They targeting everything because they are manufacturing a famine, manufacturing a huge hunger, and they want to push the people to flee the country. Arab and Muslim countries, they can't take decisive action if they want against the Zionist entity. Some of them, some of these countries, they have relationship with the Zionist entity, and they recognize, Turkey recognize the Zionist entity from 1949. And let's not forget, Turkey is the one who lost as an Ottoman Empire run by the Turkish nationalists at the time, lost Palestine to the British occupation. And not forget, Egypt is the country who lost Gaza Strip to the Zionist entity in 1967. At least those two countries, who I'm picking at, they have a moral duty more than any other country to put the efforts, because this chaos, the Palestinian and genocide the Palestinian facing because of these two countries' failures, mainly. The Arab states and Arab countries, the ones who have, as I said, these kind of relationship, they can cut the ties like some Latin Americans did. They can boycott this Nazi terrorist country. The Arab and Muslim countries, they can put a pressure now in Washington with their capacity. I'm talking about countries who have... go ahead.
Yeah, well, the question is, and I'm going to ask Slikinada to that, why do you think that they can't do it? Why are they not doing it? I mean, Iran has said a trade and oil embargo would probably be one of the best things that can be done. And also, Iran has gone ahead and labeled the army a terrorist entity, asking also for Palestinians to be armed. But let's begin with that embargo on oil and trade. Why isn't there a will on the behalf of the countries, either Muslim countries or even countries in West Asia, or some call the Middle East, to go ahead with an embargo on Israel?
I think, in my view, this is still a continuation of the divide and rule strategy of the Western countries. So I think at the moment, when you see Arab countries not really taking any strong stance, it's because I think they have been convinced that there is this Shia Sunni, for example, one of the factors in the region, and that Iran is vying for supremacy. And it is the fear that, for example, for Saudi Arabia, that if Israel was not on their side, or if America was not supporting them, then when it comes to regional powers, they would be overcome. So this, of course, is nothing new. We know that the whole colonialism was based on these principles of divide and rule. And therefore, this is something that is still happening. In a way, I guess, it is a good thing to see that all these countries, after so long, these very countries like Saudi Arabia, who were trying to re-establish, connections with Israel, they are now talking somewhat the same language, but there is no action. There is nothing following that. There is no action plan. So it's just words. And the reason why they are saying all this is because they have to appease the masses. It's the people in all these Muslim and Arab countries. They want to see something done, so they have to appease them. But I don't think there is any political will. And the main reason I think they are lacking political will is there is this division. Every country is thinking about its own survival. There is no concept of a regional a Muslim ummah or, nations coming together to protect each other. I personally see this to be the main reason why there is no political will.
It's very hard to understand this, Sapshath, and I don't want to beat this to a pulp here, but a ceasefire, is that really too hard for these countries to push the U.S. to do?
Exactly.
Even if it's a 24 hours, even if it's 2 days, even if it's, it's a ceasefire. They're not asking for the war to stop at this point anyways, but if that can't even be done, as you say, if Egypt can't even be forced to open up the gates of the Rafah border crossing, there's something really wrong with what's going down here.
You see, I call it the Arab Sting, which is the Arab Spring, there is a huge geopolitical changes in the Arab world, and there is a lot of regimes which came and popped in the region, which is totally controlled by the United States of America, among the monarchists and the Mashiachism from Arabia. So there is a change in that. You used to have regimes like in Iraq and in Libya and in Algeria and in Tunisia and in Egypt itself. And that, even with their connection with the United States of America, they have leverage. We remember 1973 when the Saudis and the Arab producing and Muslim producing countries, supported by some international, they put the boycott on the Western countries who support the Zionist entity. And they created mayhem and chaos for the Western countries' economies. I know today they cannot do that, but I don't want to get into the details at the time. The West, they thought at the beginning that boycott might benefit their companies, but at the end of the day, their economy is destroyed. I'm talking about today. These countries, they can only start gradually to ditch the dollar as a standard reserve currency that is used today in the pricing of oil and selling on of it. Which is this in its own, this tactic provides the USA with this, you know, like similar to the gold cover for the dollar, and allows the United States of America to bring dollars and to hegemonize the world financial affairs. The US, then this dominance will collapse. If the Arab countries and Muslim countries who produce oil start ditching that, you can't find China and Russia as well, Venezuela and other countries like Brazil, South Africa. All of these countries will start joining because they are looking to find a new platform, not the USA dominance. This is a springboard toward that. But these, most of these regimes we're talking about in the Islamic and Arabic world, they are controlled by the United States of America. But at the same time, I'm saying that what's happening in Gaza, what the resistance is doing in Gaza today, it will be a springboard for another real Arab Spring, will shake the regimes then.
Sure. That day could be coming sooner than later. Let's look at what happened today, where you're at, Sakina Datu. It was another record-breaking moment, I believe, in terms of the number of people that came out to the streets of London. And it's quite incredible to see that many people come out. And the headlines in more places than one were reading how there's divisions now in the UK when it comes to the Palestinian cause, where you have the people on the streets and then you have the UK officials. What is the division, and why is it that we're seeing such a divide when it comes to the people in terms of the numbers, and then when it comes to the politicians?
I have to start by saying that, you know, today I feel very, very proud of London. Close to a million people were on the streets of London. I was one of them. And it was an extremely peaceful but very, very a strong, you know, voice over there. There were not only Muslims over there. There were people from the Jewish community. There were people from all different religious, you know, denominations. There were all colors. And the reason why all these people came together is because there was one time in the West where we were controlled by the mainstream media. So people only got one side of the story. Because of the social media and also the alternative media, people have been watching and making their own analysis and trying to see what is going on. You know, the large majority of the people are good human beings. This is what I believe. And when they see an oppression, they recognize it. It is another thing, of course, that the leadership, it's a obvious Tory party that is very much one with America and Israel. And I think this brings the point of, you know, Sheikh Nasrullah, what he explained in his speech about that it wasn't actually, we always think that the lobby in the Western countries is very strong, the Israeli lobby, but it's actually America who controls Israel. So it's America and Britain. But we've had a very interesting scenario here because our home secretary here went out of her way to ensure that this rally does not take place. She's even gone and written in the newspaper and criticizing the police who are under her, under the home secretary. And she said these police are siding with the protesters. And it was, you know, she's been proven wrong. The rally went ahead. So many people came there and there was absolutely no issues. The only problem that happened were from the opposite side, the far right, who actually wanted to interrupt and create problems for the rally and who were, you know, arrested by the police. But on the sides of pro-Palestinians, there was absolutely no violence. And this proves that people out there have a reason, which is a very valid reason to be there. They're not trying to create a problem.
Looking at another development here, the Sabshath, is the fact that you had the Hezbollah Secretary General also speak today. Now, about an hour or so ago, we understand that Israel has come out and has leveled a threat against Hezbollah, saying that, you know, if you are going to get engaged more with us in terms of the military skirmishes, let me read exactly what it said so there's no miscommunication from me. This is what the news said. Israel warning Hezbollah that Beirut could face similar fate to Gaza. Okay, what do you make of that threat? What is Israel trying to do there? Is it trying to cover the weakness that it may have when it comes to Hezbollah? Or are we looking at the fact that you have how many USS carriers in the region and their artillery there that has emboldened Israel to make such a threat against Hezbollah?
You see, the Zionist entity is being led today by real far-right fascist, and even I want to go Nazist kind of a group. And this group don't think of their own even people or Arabs or Muslims or anything. So to them, and some, like there is some religious groups in America, which is they are looking, Christian Zionists, looking for Armageddon, and they think this is the point. And when they say Netanyahu is, you know yourself, and is being threatened by a lot of a court action, and it blasts this failure of the Palestinian resistance in the 7th of October, toppling all his, what they call it, Gaza brigades and Gaza's units in less than 6 hours. And they couldn't act, the Zionist entity, security-wise or military-wise, till the day of the 8th of October. And that day of 8th of October, this is where the problem, when they panicked the Israeli army and start shooting. There is a lot of evidence today surfacing, and more will surface, how the helicopters opened fire at the people who were in the concert in the near the kibbutz or the settlements. And at the same time, how is their tanks open fire on houses there was in it, as they claim, hostages and some one or two of the resistance fighters. A lot of the killings, which they say, the civilians or children or something, being done with their army. And this is proven today. So the Netanyahu doesn't want to face that, doesn't want to face corruption. He wants to take advantage of the armada. It's in the East Mediterranean now, facing Gaza and Lebanon. And he wants to engage this ancient old man, Biden, who came the second day to shore up their entity, which was collapsing, shore it up and put it in the state like it's standing up and it's facing this function state. So the Zionists are trying to, which is Hezbollah understand very well, and the resistance understand it very well, and Iran as well and Syria understand it very well. That's why Hezbollah was engaged in a gradual kind of engagement from them to suck some of the military, which means gets less pressure on Gaza and to divert them toward Lebanon. But the Zionist entity now, they're trying anything to get the United States of America engaged. And this engagement means they try to do something in the south of Lebanon. But I tell you what, the Lebanese resistance and the Palestinian resistance, they are very intelligent and capable leadership they got. So they are not going to fail for somebody who is going for the Armageddon to save his skin. And as Samson said, on my enemies and on me as well at the same time. So this is the sure. Zionist mentality of Netanyahu.
Well, trying to understand the mentality of a minister, an Israeli minister, that I'm sure you heard the news, Sakinada, too, that came out and said maybe we should drop a nuclear bomb on the Gaza Strip. I mean, at this point, I think it's the equivalent of two nuclear bombs in terms of the amount of tons of ammunition that have been dropped on the Gaza Strip. The whole notion of Israel thinking that killing Palestinians is going to solve the problem somehow is very mind-boggling. I mean, you take any year from the year 2003, 2005, you pick a year up to now, you can see that the ratio of Israelis killed versus Palestinians is so much less than the number of Palestinians killed. But did that solve the problem? It didn't solve the problem. Why do they think killing Palestinians is going to solve the problem?
I think there are two different things here. Number one, you know, it's not mind-boggling. I think If you understand the mentality of the Zionists, when they talk about Palestinians, they don't talk of them as human beings. They've called them cockroaches. They've called them, they don't see them as humans. And once you dehumanize any population, then you don't have a difficulty in killing as many of them because you don't see them as human beings. You don't see their dignity. You don't value their life. So what they're doing is, they don't really, the more, the merrier, they make their people happy because they are killing so many Palestinians. But also, I think this, again, another reason why they have gone on mass killing them is I don't really only see this as Israel's war. I think this is America's war in the region. And I think America has very, goals. They've got very strategic. Most of these are economic goals in terms of the trade, the Suez Canal, and trying to create an alternative to it. They have now found something that they have had the plans for a long time, but they have found an opportunity this time to make it happen. And so they are bombing Gaza. They want to just, graze it down to the ground. This gives them an opportunity to start on those plans. But it's also very alarming that, Lebanon is coming into the place. And yes, we can discuss about the Hezbollah and the resistance. But for me personally, I am just fearful of how many more people are going to die, how many more children. And that's really very, very disturbing.
Well, the Hezbollah Secretary General Saab Shaath, my final question, says that Israel has hit 10,000 targets in the Gaza Strip. He said that's just not the case. There can't be 10,000 targets there. That Israel is overestimating or overstating the number of targets. That Israel actually, based on the most recent statement by the spokesperson Abu Ubaidah from the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, has said that they've destroyed 160 Israeli military targets in the past 48 hours, including more than 25 vehicles. Quote, the confrontation is unequal, but it frightens and terrifies the most powerful force in the region, is what he said. Do you think that Israel is suffering a lot and may be caught in this quagmire that it has created in the Gaza Strip?
You see, the 10,000 targets the Zionist entity talking about to market to their own people who are thirsty, the Zionists, for the Arab blood, as my colleague was saying rightly. Every child, every woman, every man was one of their target. Since the Herzog himself, the president, who's from the left of this entity, monstrous entity, he said, everyone in Gaza is not innocent. The soldiers, they've been told they are not going to be held accountable for any war crimes or anything by their leadership. And everybody in Gaza is a target. Every single soldiers have that. And a lot of them talked and bragged about it in the media. Gaza, what the targets in Gaza? They had the universities, the hospitals, the schools.
Yeah, sorry. We're just fresh out of time. I do apologize, but thank you very much, Saab Shaath, author and West Asia expert from Belfast. Sakineh Datu, journalist, author, and producer from London. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. Thanks for being with us. From Mikova Tawai and the team, it's goodbye.